I mean, how about the chance, too? This will be only the fifth game that the Braves have taken on the New York Mets. So a three-game series. The Braves interplay tonight. They've got the two-and-a-half-game lead over the Phillies, but seven-and-a-half games on top of the Mets and eight-and-a-half ahead of Washington. You know, it's not too early to put a nail in somebody's coffin, and so that's why these three games are huge, more so probably for the Mets than the Braves, because the Mets can easily see this slipping away. They're three games under 500. They're facing injury factors, too. And then as you just brought the name Dallas Keuchel, he's going to be joining the Braves sooner rather than later.
Yeah, sounds like it's this Friday. You go back and you kind of demoralize an opponent. That's why Saturday's loss to the Phillies was so bad, because if the Braves could have got a sweep against the Phillies, that got a chance to linger this far into the season, knowing what's at stake. But the huge series of the Mets too, and Nationals, you know, next weekend, because you could put a lot of distance between you and those teams. And this is the time of year. Look, you know, it's a trade deadline does come, and it does come sooner rather than later. I mean, the summer's flying by, right? So if you can put one of your or two of your competitors in a spot where, you know, they become sellers rather than buyers, then that's a big deal. And they've got a chance to do that over the next month or so.
Barrett Salee joining us once again. Obviously, your specialty, college football. First things first, when we look at the SEC, you know, I enjoyed Kentucky's run last year. The question I have for you, based on the fact that they lost so many players, I mean, look at the fact that, if you're Tennessee, you would have loved to have had Kentucky's year last year if you were talking about the NFL draft, you know, having all those players leave your program and now having the opportunity to play at the next level. What happens for Kentucky in the immediate future?
I think they're going to take a little bit of a step back, but not off a crater. And I think that's the actual compliment to Mark Stoops. I don't think Terry Wilson's that good of a quarterback. They're going to have a hard time replacing Benny Snell. And defensively, I mean, replacing Josh Allen is almost synonymous. It is impossible. So, you know, I think they're going to take a little step back, but a step back for Kentucky in the past has been, you know, back to 3, 4, 5 wins. I think this is more a step back towards 6 or 7 wins. And that, you know, in a sort of a weird backwards way, you know, that's progress. That shows stability. That's the kind of thing that Dan Mullen did at Mississippi State. He'd have one of those years where it popped, and then they'd regress, but they'd regress to a lower-tier bowl game, which is still a really good deal for a team that's not a program that's not necessarily a college football power. So I think it's going to be that kind of year. And you know, resets happen. It's going to be a reset, but I don't think it's going to be one that is a drastic step off a cliff like Kentucky has seen in the past.
Well, it's twofold when you lose players. It's one thing to lose players, and then you have players that can step in and play. It's another thing to lose players that also meant so much to the team last year as far as off the field, as far as that leadership. And it's one thing to go, okay, next man up, you're going to be now the new leader of the team. It doesn't work that way, and that's why sometimes when we talk about teams losing players, you know, how much does it impact them as far as when you look at it from a total pitcher standpoint? And that's that's why I'm most curious about Kentucky's situation, because Josh Allen, to me, along with Benny Snell, I mean, we're talking about two individuals that meant so much from both sides of the ball for that Kentucky football team last year.
Yeah, they did. And how much pressure was taken off of Terry Wilson by Benny Snell? A ton. And Terry Wilson wasn't that good as a passer last year, so you know, more pressure on his shoulders, you would assume, because there's no Benny Snell on that roster. You know, what does the offense look like? I do think that that staff is really good and really, flexible, and they do, you know, sort of build their system any given season towards the personnel, as good as anybody in the country, but their personnel might not be that good, you know. So if you take Benny Snell off that roster, what does it do to everybody else? Well, it puts pressure in spots that they may not be built to withstand. Same thing with Josh Allen. You take him out of the equation, you know, whose responsibilities change, and a lot of people's responsibilities will. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a tough year for Kentucky. I think they can still be competitive. Like I said, I think they'll still be, you know, a bowl caliber team, and, you know, certainly, you know, able to string an upset. But anything beyond that, 10 wins like they had last year, I don't think that's happening.
Barrett, I know quarterback is just only one part of this equation. This year, I mean, when you think about all the transfers that are out there, but if you just stuck to just quarterback, I mean, you almost have to have a bulletin board to know, okay, now this team has this guy that used to play for that team. Good example, just the SEC alone, Kelly Bryant from Clemson, now playing with Missouri. You've got, you know, Vanderbilt. You know, Riley Neal was at Ball State. Now he's with Vanderbilt. You've got a Ben Hicks that was with the with SMU. Now he's at Arkansas. I'm really curious to see how these quarterbacks impact their teams immediately. I mean, not just for the overall 2019 season, but off to good starts as far as the month of September.
Yeah, then you also have Nick Starkle potentially at Arkansas, and you have Tommy Stevens at Mississippi State.
So, right.
Yeah, there's a lot to go around. You know, and I think that's the day and age we live in, and I'm okay with it, honestly, because there's only one ball, and quarterbacks that feel like they can play at a high level, you know, should play at a high level, right? So, you know, they move around to try to find homes. But I think that's the most interesting part of media days, unfortunately. I'm sure the questions will be limited to the transfer portal and things like that, things that coaches have already addressed. But I'm fascinated to see how some of these coaches are going to use these transfer quarterbacks, you know, how Barry Odom and Derek Dooley expect to use Kelly Bryant, what they're going to ask him to do, because what he excels at isn't necessarily what Drew Locke excelled at. And then, you know, just in general, you know, how the quarterback position is going to evolve within the conference, because aside from, you know, the transfer guys, you've got Jarrett Garantano, who was solid but not necessarily a difference maker, save for one really, really good game. You've got what's happening at Auburn with Gatewood and Nix, you know, a complete mystery. You got Matt Corral, which I don't think anybody's talking about how, you know, Ole Miss's offense might take a massive step back, but you have a gunslinger who they've trusted for a while. So I'm just the quarterbacks in the SEC I'm fascinated by, and I hope that does become front and center at media days. Because honestly, kind of sick of the transfer portal at this point.
Well, you brought up Matt Corral, and I was actually talking about that on the air last week with Cole Kublik, and the fact that, you know, here's a team that you, when you think about what they had with you know, at quarterback and all the weapons at wide receiver, and to me, they left some unfinished business on the field. They left some wins on the field. Now, I understand the fact that for two straight years they had no bowl to play for. And you really wonder how that impacted the team, or maybe it was just the fact that they lose after up 7-0, they lose 62-7 to Alabama. That probably impacted them for two or three games as well. But when you look at really what that offense had, I really expected more out of Ole Miss last year, and now most of those guys we're talking about are gone.
I do too. I thought they were going to be awesome last year offensively, and the weird thing is, Johnny, is I don't know how they weren't. Like, even still, like, they still were successful with those players, and they had a running game in Scotty Phillips. And the defense was so bad that even that kind of firepower was not good enough. So, yeah, I was disappointed in them, too. I thought they'd be able to jump up and grab a team or two. You and I both were on the Alabama over Ole Miss bandwagon, Ole Miss over Alabama bandwagon. That didn't happen, but... Yeah, I mean, losing all that talent, especially outside, it's going to be tough. Especially considering, you know, Matt Corral, even though he's talented, has never done this before. I wonder what kind of coach Matt Luke is now. Did the talent carry him to the point where they were last couple of years? Because if that's the case, then a massive regression could be in the cards, and that would not sit well with the Ole Miss fans.
Well, then again, too, if only one side of the ball is performing well, all of a sudden you get some, you know, division there in the locker room, and certainly when you look at Ole Miss and from a defensive standpoint, I'm sure there was not a lot of happy folks there on the offensive side of the ball, knowing the defense couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you only go so far until you kind of give up, right, and say, guys, help me out a little bit, and I'm sure Ole Miss is not, but the exact opposite, I would say, it was true of Auburn, because Auburn's defense kept them in every game until, you know, mid-November, and then it was just like, guys, come on. You know, enough's enough. We can't carry the team here. Shoulders are starting to hurt here. So, yeah, I mean, that's what the morality of a locker room or clubhouse or whatever, bench, in whatever sport, If one side's succeeding and carrying a team, that's fleeting. It's not going to last, and it didn't last for Ole Miss last year. And I can't even remember a situation where a team like that has had success at an elite level, because you just can't sustain it.
What's your expectations for Vanderbilt this year? I mean, first of all, I know they, you know, when you look at just conference play, it's tough when your first three games, you start the year at home against Georgia, then you're at Purdue, and then a home game against LSU. So you're rocking and rolling your first three contests. But, you know, we mentioned Riley Neal competing for the starting job as far as at quarterback for Vanderbilt. You know, what's your overall thoughts about this Commodores team?
I think it's going to be tough. Just because I think the SEC East in general is going to be better, top to bottom. And because of that, Vandy, you know, even if they are competitive, Kyle Schirmer was awesome. And Riley Neal has been successful at Ball State. I get that. But, you know, the offensive line I have an issue with, because they're playing better defensive fronts this year based on experience and teams that have, you know, recruited very, very well above them. I think Vandy's going to struggle to make a bowl game. I do think that Derek's a good coach, but I just think that it's so hard to do anything more than 6-6 at Vandy in the regular season on a consistent basis. And so the combination of a new quarterback, even though he has experience, combined with the upside that just isn't there, and certainly isn't competitive to where other teams in the SEC East are and where they're going. I think it's going to be tough. I think they'll make a bowl game maybe, but anything beyond that, I think a little aggressive.
Barrett Salee joining us as he does every Monday, columnist with CBSSports.com, also a co-host on Sirius XM Channel 84. With regards to the Georgia Bulldogs, they're using the theme this year that the third time's the charm. Are you buying it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if they can upset Alabama, but they certainly have come close. So you know you have it in them. I would not be surprised about that at all. I think that the last 2 years, the reasons they lost were simple. It's Kirby Smart. And it's not a knock against Kirby Smart as a coach. It's just a...
Well, I think we just lost... Well, there you are.
And so if you're Kirby Smart, you make some mistakes. He was not prepared for Tua in the national championship game, even though we all knew that him playing was a possibility. He was not prepared for Jalen in the SEC championship game last year, even though we all knew it was a possibility. And he panicked and he called that fake punt, which was absolutely unacceptable. So I think from a coaching perspective, he's learning. And once he gets it, then they'll be fine and they'll get over that hump, because they clearly can get to that point. They just have a relatively inexperienced coach that's learning on the job, and he's learned a whole lot in 3 years, and he's just got a little bit more to learn.
I'm really curious to see, you know, the ties to Georgia and the SEC and the quarterbacks that are currently with both Alabama and Georgia. And what I'm bringing up is the fact that here you have Jacob Eason now with Washington. Washington, you know, could be a team that we're talking about in the month of November coming out of the Pac-12. There's Justin Fields from Georgia to Ohio State. Ohio State has certainly, since we've had the college football playoff, in that conversation. And then you get Jalen Hurts going from Alabama to Oklahoma. Same kind of situation. Oklahoma could certainly be in the playoff hunt in the month of November. And then the two guys that are currently in their positions, Fromm with Georgia and Tua Tagovailoa with Alabama. I would love to see some combination of those guys as far as finalists for the Heisman Trophy this year.
It would be awesome to see Tua, Jalen, Trevor, and Fromm, because you'd have basically the superstars of the sport that have been around for a while all together in what would be, I would imagine, a fantastic Heisman Trophy race. So, you know, it's very rare that you get that. What was it? Tebow, Bradford, and Colt McCoy was like the last time I think I remember having a situation where like the three front runners at the start of the year were there at the end of the year.
Right.
And you know, it could happen this year. It's quarterback driven award. You know, voters vote for familiar faces. All those guys are familiar faces. So it wouldn't surprise me if something like that happened again.
Barrett Salee joining us as always. Tennessee, your thoughts about Tennessee year two with Jeremy Pruitt. Are you seeing, you expect more of as far as opening up the offense, or is it still another year or two away from where they want to be compared to what they're going to be doing this year?
I think they'll open it up. I think the problem is the offensive line, and Jim Chaney is the kind of guy who I think can game plan around that a little bit. And if he can, then they're going to open it up. They're going to open it up. I mean, they've got wide receivers. I love all three of those guys, especially Marquez Callaway. They've got experienced running backs. I think Jarrett Garantano is one of the more underappreciated players in the country. And, again, like I think Jim Chaney is a really good offensive coordinator. So I do think they'll open it up this year. How long that lasts, you know, after this season, I don't know. We'll see. They'll have to recruit some of those wide receivers that that they've got this year, you know, and hopefully get the same kind of size, speed, and production they've gotten from Jennings and Callaway through the first years of their career. But, yeah, I think that you will see them open up. I think Jeremy Pruitt understands what Tennessee has to be. They have to be creative. They have to be dynamic. That's why you went and hired Jim Chaney. And so I think you're going to see that immediately, as long as the offensive line is capable of at least giving the offense time to produce and give the offense enough time to, you know, get into what they want to do on a consistent basis. And if that happens, Tennessee's going to be tough.
You like the way Tennessee's schedule plays out before they have the back-to-back conference games, although there's a week in between when they take on Florida on the road on September 21st, and then the first Saturday of October they get Georgia, but they begin the year against Georgia State, then they have BYU, and then Chattanooga. It goes two ways. First of all, you know, you would like to see your team challenged early before you get into conference play, but at the same time, if you have still a developing team, you like to develop some confidence before you get into this play as well.
You do, but you got one. I mean, BYU, it can serve as that tough team, or at least challenged team, to get you ready. So I think this is a year they need that. They need to know what their offensive line is capable of going into conference play. They'll know against BYU, because, you know, people down here don't watch a ton of BYU, but if you want to see adults play football, BYU has adults. They have literal adults playing football. Because of the mission trips and things like that. So, you know, if you've got grown-ups on the defensive line and you've got a college offensive line trying to block them, I don't care how good or bad those defensive linemen are, they're still big, fast, and strong, and you're going to have your work cut out for them. So I think it sets up well for Tennessee. I think the fact that you have a team like BYU mixed into a couple, you know, cupcakes is a good way to get the season started and get you prepared for SEC play.
All right, before we let you go, let's talk a little College World Series. We have our first team eliminated. Texas Tech knocked off Arkansas 5-4, so Arkansas, the first of the eight that's gone out of Omaha. How tough was it last night watching Auburn? Here they are up 4-1, going to the bottom of the ninth. You know, my thought, after, you know, Mississippi State gets the first runner on double, right, forget about them. You still got a three-run lead, so forget about it. They score. You still got a two-run lead. Pretend that you're starting the bottom of the ninth with no outs, but it's easier said than done. And here's a Mississippi State team that just has no quit in them whatsoever.
Yeah, it was exciting. You feel bad for that third baseman for Auburn. I think his name's Edward Julian. That was tough. But, yeah, that's what it's all about, man. Like, College World Series, these kids have not been in this pressure situation before. You know, it's a whole different ball game if you're Auburn, because this is new territory, not necessarily the same for Mississippi State. You know, they kind of know what to expect. And so, yeah, I think a lot of panic set in across Auburn's roster. And that was tough, man. That was not the way you want to go out in your first game in Omaha and put yourself in the loser's bracket. But it was fun. It was exciting. It's been a pretty fun tournament so far. I still can't believe what Florida State did to Arkansas 2 days ago.
1-0, baby.
Great pitching performance. That was fantastic.
Well, and you get a little bit of both. You get teams that are supposed to be in this position, like Vanderbilt, the number two national seed, took care of business against Louisville yesterday, 3-1. And then, you know, coming up tonight at 6, you've got Michigan and Florida State, two teams that were three seeds in their respective regionals. And you have Florida State, and Florida State has not lost yet. You know, they're 6-0. They swept their regional, swept the super regional on the road against LSU last week, and now they beat Arkansas. All six of those wins, we're talking about five of the six, you know, came against SEC competition.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically owning it, and you know, love the story with Mike Martin in his final year, you know, getting to Omaha when maybe he wasn't, his team wasn't supposed to, and then now, I mean, they put themselves in position to maybe do more than just be there, and that's, you know, the nation always looks for a story to get behind, because by and large, no one pays attention to college baseball. until this time of year. And I said this on my show on Sunday. I would imagine everybody outside of the teams that are playing and Miami and Florida, pretty much everybody's probably a Florida State fan at the moment.
Well, and here's the thing. The key, we saw the stat where if you, you know, 34 out of the last 38 national champs in college baseball won their very first game. Tonight is huge for either Florida State or Michigan because whoever wins this game tonight, they don't play again until Friday. They allow everybody else to beat up their pitching staff. So that's why tonight is crucial for both of these teams.
It's enormous, and especially in college baseball postseason, you don't have that many starters. So you gotta make sure and try your best to make sure that the World Series or any postseason tournament goes the way a normal, you know, college baseball schedule goes with a game on Tuesday and then a series over the weekend to make sure your pitching staff is ready the same way that it normally is. Otherwise, you get in situations where it's Johnny Holstaff, and that just doesn't work out usually.